Hello, I'm Alison Larkin, writer, comedian, narrator, and host of the Jane Austen podcast. Join me as we embark on a journey through Austen's timeless stories, starting with Pride and Prejudice. The Jane Austen podcast with Alison Larkin is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Well, hello, everyone.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited, Jenny. I'm just so excited.
Welcome to this blessed space.
All I wanted was to be able to speak with Amber Benson in this, the week of Seeing Red. It's all I wanted.
Oh, and wish granted.
My wish was granted. Thank you so fucking much to the universe and Amber Benson and all those who helped.
And possibly a vengeance demon somewhere working silently in the background answering Kristen's wishes.
Oh, like a really good, like a little cheerful vengeance demon.
Probably wouldn't
be called vengeance then. But anyway, yeah, we're here with Amber Benson, the one and only. And we're going to not talk too much up at the top here because we know that you will, as much as you love us.
You're like, shut up.
You're like,
give us Amber.
Yeah. We'd like to hear Amber. So just quick note, this is one of our four episodes this week. Yesterday, you got Jenny and I in the main feed talking about the episode Seeing Red. You also got an additional episode from me and Jess Clark and Alba. Talking about the bathroom scene in Seeing Red. Today, you're getting two more episodes, one in the main feed, that's this one, us talking to Amber Benson. And in the show notes, you will see a link to a very special episode that I put together talking about the bury your gaze trope, talking about also the importance of Willow and Tara. I'm speaking with Jen Malkowski, who you know, yes, just absolutely one of our best.
The best.
Pod friends. I mean, truly, I am just obsessed with Jen Malkowski and all that they have to say. And I'm also in conversation with our listener, Emma, who wrote to us about the fact that she was on the kitten board, which was the Willow and Tara Buffy board of the day. Emma met her wife there, has an 11-year-old son. So there's just like a lot of queer history, joy, and also respect happening in that conversation. Link in the show notes. That episode will also re-air at the end of the season in the main feed. So I told you I wasn't going to talk too much, but there I went.
You're doing great. You're doing so great.
Thank you.
Let me just chime in here and warn everyone, wave a big flag. This conversation will include spoilers. Spoilers for the entire series of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Beware, all ye who enter here. Your ears are not safe if you have not seen the entire series. If you haven't, come back at the end of the pod and then check this out.
Yeah, it'll still be here for you. That's how time space continuums work with podcasts. They exist forever.
Good job.
You can see my giant saucer eyeballs looking at Jenny like, you're right, I don't understand time-space continuums. Gotta go.
No.
So, yeah, let's get into this shit. It's great. Also, just for the record, want to let everyone know that I am wearing one of our new denim dad hats that we have in the store.
Yep.
And I don't mean to put words in your mouth, Jenny, but I think that it looks fantastic on my head. What do you think?
I just said it looks cool.
Oh, I was talking over you when you said I looked cool. So
it, classic. Classic, Kristen.
A tiny reminder.
I didn't hear your compliment because I was talking.
Because I was complimenting myself too loudly.
Yeah, exactly.
So just a tiny little reminder to all of you that we have some really incredible new merch in the store. Pay Buffy Summers shirts. We've got Scoobies Forever patches and pins. We have probably the world's best hoodie designed by Isabella Rotman. Time is what turns kittens into cats. You can find all of that on our website, bufferingthevampireslayer.com. You've got a lot of things on that website. So, like, go head over there. Oh, yeah. Check it out. But for now, don't check it out right now. Keep listening.
Listen to this friggin' episode.
Here comes Amber Benson.
Ah! Kristen, I can't. I simply can't. What a time to be alive.
Truly. I mean, I've already off air expressed this like twice. So this is third time's the charm. But Amber Benson, holy crap. Thank you so much for being here with us. We cannot tell you what it means.
Oh, it is my pleasure. You guys are doing good things. And I wanted to come and hang out with you.
Did you hear that?
Yes.
Did you hear that? Okay. I know that our listenership knows this because I'm talking about them, but in a very tricky part of a very tricky season, this very queer listenership is just beside themselves, getting to hear from you and getting to have like the joy and happiness that is like just listening to your experiences on the show. Mm-hmm. And you have meant so much to so many. And I know you know that from like your experience interacting with fans and stuff, but the character of Tara has just been so impactful over time.
I was just the lucky person that got to walk in her shoes. I mean, you look back on life and there are always going to be good things and bad things about an experience, but Tara being her, there was nothing bad about that. It was an amazing experience. She was so wonderful and kind and empathetic and like, even like when Tony, you know, left, it was like she stepped in to be sort of that moral center for the group again, which, you know, I just was so honored that I got to play her and be her for a little while. You know, I miss her.
Yes. I mean, we've so noticed that in season six, like with, you know, with Giles being gone. I mean, I don't know that I even.
Oh my gosh. I called him Tony. I meant Giles. Tony.
But it's so confusing. Giles, we're both. Yeah.
Tony Giles.
But you know, Tara's character is just like caught every time we're like, guys, could you please talk to each other? Guys, could you please? It's like Tara is always like, hey, do you want to have a conversation?
They're so dysfunctional when it comes to like sharing their feelings. And Tara's like, no. Like, we actually have to have a conversation because you're like off in this world and you're actually thinking the same things, but you're in two different spaces and you don't understand that you guys are on the same page.
Yes. So mature. So grounded.
Wish I was like that in my real life. That would be great.
I feel like as we are, what, two-thirds of the way through season six or coming up on the end of it, Tara does have this moral center, which is like kind of really exciting because the maybe only other person as emotionally intelligent, I think, on the show is Spike, who is, you know, spiraling into the abyss. He's always ready to tell people what they can't see, but he has, you know, no real moral compass. So it's kind of awesome as we're like peaking in season six right now to see sort of like the two poles of the same kind of idea of emotional intelligence, which is so rare in the show. Everyone's just like, you know, trapped in their own bubbles.
That's really interesting. No, I know that like the Tara Spike moments were always really fun for James and myself. Those like, wait, you got a cramp in your pants? Like, I'll never forget. Like, you know, like what's happening? But I never thought of it in terms of Spike. Spike sees things in sort of an objective way, you know, but he sees them like realistically and calls it out, but he doesn't really tell you yay or nay about it. He just says it. And Tara.
Yeah. He can't tell you whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And Tara's like trying to like hold that ethical moral center and, but not wanting to like sort of put her feelings onto people. So I think you're right. They're coming from two completely opposite directions to the same spot of like being mindful of what is actually happening objectively in a situation, which I wish I could do also myself.
It's amazing what you can do with a script, you know, given
so true. So true. And good ones.
I will say too, so normally we bring in some listener questions, and I think that like in putting together this conversation, there's more listener questions than we normally have, just because there's so many, and I don't know that everybody that asked a question is queer, but I just know that everyone is very pumped. So to this, yay, like to what we're talking about, we had a listener, Suzanne, who wrote in and said, we see so much strength and independence coming from Tara, especially in season six. She's one of the main pillars of composure in a season full of people coming apart at the seams. We get to see her blossoming friendship with Buffy, and she's pretty much the only one in Sunnydale practicing healthy boundary habits. I'd love to hear how that evolution came about for you, Amber, and what it was like to create the arc of Tara growing on her own, especially because, and now I'm ad-libbing, but we, you know, when we meet Tara, she is not in a place where she's like, hey, I know, you know, what you need and what I need.
No, it was interesting. Everyone has probably heard me talk about the genesis of the character and how I ended up being her, but suffice it to say, I was only supposed to do a couple of episodes, and it kind of snowballed into being on the show quite regularly. And I think when I first, you know, started playing, so I'm an intuitive actor. I always thought it was really interesting to hear like Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward talk about their processes. And I'm like, oh, they're the flip of the same thing. Like he was very like research oriented and everything was sort of like dialed in and hyper-focused. And he just did all this research to create this character. And she, when they would talk about it, she was an intuitive actor, just whatever she felt intuitively was what would come out. And I've always sort of been in that like intuitive space. And so with Tara, intuitively, she was really like closed up and to the point where physically she was like hunched and like inward and shy and couldn't. And by the end of it, she had sort of found her way and like she stood up straighter. She was more open. She could like have a conversation with someone she didn't know. But I think the sort of arc of it was that family moment when a group of people stood up for her and said, we want you and you're worthy. And when somebody outside of you gives you that moment and allows you to sort of accept for yourself that you matter, you know, they give you the permission to be, yeah, you're right. I do matter. I'm important. We so beat that out of ourselves. We're so mean to ourselves. And sometimes you need somebody outside of you to go, stop being mean. You belong. There's a place for you. I really think after that, like she changed. It just was a visceral, like intuitive change. But that was the sort of crux of her becoming the sort of Tara that you see in season six, where she is comfortable speaking her mind. She is, you know, interested in helping other people and not judging herself all the time and allowing herself to just be a participant in the Scooby gang process.
Yeah. It's so powerful to think about that. I mean, you know, family is an incredible episode. We had a couple people tell us that they still can't trust Amy Adams after.
Who is the nicest person? We had such a lovely time. Like we had, like she was the nicest. She was so kind. We had all these scenes together. We rode to a location together in like one of the crew trucks, like just gossiping and chatting. And like, she's so kind and nice and so talented. Oh my gosh.
Well, maybe that will help people, you know, like stop thinking about Cousin Beth. I think that was her name.
Cousin Beth.
Yeah. But it's just really powerful to think about it in the context of, you know, what we were just saying, which is that in season six, Tara is really giving the Scoobies so much of what they need, like so much. Buffy, I mean, far and above.
Their relationship is so sweet. I really enjoyed those scenes with Sarah. Sarah's wonderful, and getting to work with her and these kind of like just two-handers where we're just being emotional together was really, really nice.
Jenny, I know your eyes are real big because you wanted to talk about the body. Do you want to jump? I mean, we don't have to.
So
we're not going to make you
wonderful.
Cry,
but that's one of my favorite episodes. So I got excited.
Yeah.
We've been talking a lot lately about how much we love to see Tara and Buffy together, because even though Tara is now sort of like fully synthesized into the group, she has this objectivity that nobody else can really access. And so when we get to see her in friendship with Buffy in these moments where Buffy is like confiding to her about that she's sleeping with Spike, like she can tell Tara things that she can't bring herself to tell Willow or Xander, right? And like that's so heavy. Like that's some of my favorite Tara stuff, and then your performance in The Body, like in particular in the hospital waiting area where you're in, Tara's in conversation with Buffy. I mean, it's just like one of the, to me, that's like one of the most standout powerful performances in an episode that's just completely full of standout powerful
across the board. Like everybody brought it for that episode. Everybody. Like watching Emma do that.
I mean, honestly.
Wonderful. She's brilliant.
The Body, I think, is my and Kristen's individual favorite episode of the whole series. And like, if there's anything that sticks in your mind that, you know, comes back to you as we're talking about this, like, we'd love to hear anything about making that episode.
It's up there for me. Like that, The Body and the musical are my two favorites. There's just like, and they're like, and Hush is up there also, but it's so like, it's so unique. And all three of those, like, they're just really special. To me, The Body is the most emotional episode of the whole show. I mean, it is so powerful and so upsetting. And then you also have that kiss moment, which, you know, like we had been, I've talked about this before, but, you know, we had basically been censored by, you know, Standards and Practices. They were like, we don't want them to be intimate in that way. You know, they have a lot of pushback. And Joss and the writers and I mean, everybody was like, no, this is important. This needs to be addressed. We've got to make this happen. And so when we did the kiss, finally, he's like, go for it. So we had like a really, because he was like, if I can give them this over the top kiss, we can, they won't say get rid of it. They'll say, cut it down, cut it. You know, like, and we'll end up with a kiss. That's perfect. Mm-hmm. Because it won't just be like, if we do a little bit, they'll be like, get rid of it. But if we go all the way, we'll become compromised.
Right.
So, I mean, literally there's like spittle and like the whole, it's like the whole enchilada right there. And it was just to sort of like push them to like show the physical or the physicality of that relationship, which was really like annoying to everybody. Cause you're like, wait, so Buffy and Spike can do it on a head, like a sepulcher, you know, like, but we can't touch. And Alice and I were both very upset about it. We were like, this is not cool. This is not fair, not right. And I've talked about this before, but one of the crew who, was queer, took us aside and he's like, look, yeah, it sucks. But the most important thing, the thing that we hold on to with this relationship is that it's two people who fell in love, who both happen to be the same gender. And you go into people's houses every week and they see you guys and they see this relationship and you normalize it. You make it okay. Because he's like, there are people, well, maybe he didn't say it, but I say this, there are people who have never experienced mm-hmm. queer people. They don't mm-hmm. understand. They're like, oh, I don't know. And if you don't know it, how can you be like, oh, this is bad or good? You don't know, mm-hmm. you know? And so people just, I think oftentimes just jump to the bad because that's easier than the good. And when you walk into someone's house every week on their TV, I guess you don't walk in, you're beamed in. and they see the beauty of this relationship and they see how great it is. They're like, oh, we like lesbians. These lesbians are awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, you normalize it, you make it okay because it is okay. It should be okay. And it's getting better. It's not there yet, but it's getting better. It's a very slow, annoyingly slow process. But Buffy participated in that process of normalizing and making just finding somebody to love. It doesn't matter. Like, love is love, right? You're trans, if you're queer, if you're cis, you know, it doesn't, like, finding somebody is that's mm-hmm. doesn't matter.
Yeah. And that, like, to that kiss specifically, it's like, we talked a lot about that moment in our episodic conversation of The Body, because there's something so, and I'm sure it was done intentionally, but the fact that it is a kiss of love, like that yeah. It's like they're both suffering and they're coming together. There's, you know, and we get plenty, you know, we get other like sexy, specifically sexy yeah. stuff later. Yeah. But I think that like seeing their first kiss so grounded in partnership with each other was yes. just groundbreaking. I mean, there was not anything like that.
No. And that is a testament to Joss Whedon. It was him. And then it was everybody else, all of us coming together to make this show and to have those moments and to, you know, from the person who is painting the scenery, who is putting the posters on the wall, who is costuming, who's performing, who's right, like all of it came together to make these moments that are so important, that we're not just, we weren't just making television. We were making social commentary. We were trying to change things, you know, and that was part of, like, everyone was aware of that. Like, it wasn't done like, oh, we just happened to be, like, it was done intentionally. Like, this was important and everyone knew it was important.
One of the things that I've been sort of like, apparently I'm producing like 47 episodes around Seeing Red, probably so I just don't have to think about the episode itself. But I recently connected with this woman in the UK who had reached out, and she said, you know, I don't know if anybody shared this with you before, but I was on the Buffy boards and I was on the Kitten board, which was the name of the Tara Willow board. And she met her wife on the Kitten board. I know. And they have an 11-year-old son. And I just like, I know. And her name's Emma. And I had this like hour-long conversation with her, and it just came up now organically because it's like, this was so important to so many people, but like that experience of like this person and so many others like her were that she was closeted in her day-to-day life. She was not out. That spot on the internet was the place where she was herself, where she found her people. She like flew from the UK to Vegas. There was like a Kitten board convention. She told me all sorts of wild stuff.
Yep.
But like that, it's like that. I think that for some, if you're not, if you haven't like experienced that, like being closeted and like not telling everyone who you are in truth, and then sort of coming to that truth via a character like Tara, a relationship like Tara and Willow, maybe it's not as clear, like as clear of how powerful it is, but it really changed lives.
No, I mean, one of the most amazing things to me about Buffy is the fact that this community sprung up around the show across the like it's there's the like I like Buffy, and then there are all the different variations on that theme. And you know, the kid and the witch and the bad wardrobe, like that was one of the little sections of one of the little areas that people found each other. For me, like getting letters, I mean, we got this was pre like social media. This was like way before. This was like chat room time, like chat, you know, boards. And there was email, but it, you know, like no social media, no Twitter, nothing that like in your face. And getting letters from people who are like, I live in a little tiny town in the middle of nowhere, and I don't know but anybody else who's queer. Mm-hmm. And watching you guys makes me feel like I belong to something, that like I'm not alone. Mm-hmm. And my mom and I watch it, or my dad and I, my family, we watch it, and it allowed me to talk about who I am. Like, come on. Like, come on. How incredible is that? And the fact that like, I never got any nasty letters. Like I got some religious tracts, people going like, you know, we want like Jesus to like take you and whatever, but it was never hate filled. It was never mean spirited. Like for whatever reason, that relationship engendered a lot of love. And even if you didn't agree with it, there was not that like hate that sometimes you see for stuff. This like just idiot hate. It's just stupid hate that has no bearing in reality. It's just somebody's issues that they're putting out on something. Mm-hmm. But with that relationship, it's the thing I'm probably most proud of as a person being involved in. You know, like I've done a lot of stuff, and that one, because of that relationship, the Tara Willow relationship, like that's a thing that like I feel like if I died tomorrow, I would be satisfied with my life because I got to participate and be a part of that.
Yeah. You're not allowed to talk about dying tomorrow, but that's
my mom still has not seen the episode. She's like, I can't watch.
Oh no. No. May it like, forever be so. She should never watch it.
No, she's like, it's you and it's Tara. No, not gonna watch.
Oh, mom.
Isn't that sweet? Yes. She lives in a world where Tara never died. I think a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
Jenny, I see it.
I have a question. Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Thanks. A moment of like impish diversion, since you mentioned standards and practices and you talked about like delivering a super over the top kiss so that you could get like a regular like plain feeling kiss past the censors. It's reminding me of a particular moment and a particular prop in the episode Family. And I don't know if you remember this.
Oh, God.
Maybe it's burned in your mind, like the way it has become burned in our minds. Maybe not. But there's a scene where
All right.
Tara's dad is waiting for her in her dorm room. And he's like sort of, gesturing around to all of the magic adjacent items.
Yeah. The occult stuff everywhere.
Mm-hmm. The occult stuff everywhere. And then, he says something like, did you want me to see all these toys? And as he says the word toys, he picks up what can only be described as a particularly phallic crystal that happens to be on a counter. And I'm just wondering if that was like a sort of deliberate fuck you that everyone knew would fly under the censor radar, or if it was just some fun.
I don't know if that was on purpose. I imagine it had to have been on purpose. Come on. Like, that's pretty.
It's a choice.
That's a choice. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know whether it was done on purpose or not, but I imagine it was. I can't remember if there was a conversation about it. I remember the moment now that you're talking. I'm like, oh yeah, no, he, yeah, that was, yes, yes. What that was doing in the room, we don't know.
Right. Magic, lots and lots of magic.
So much magic.
So much magic. Really intense magic.
Nothing could transition us better to talking about witchcraft than phallic crystals. But like, we can go there. Magic, it gets muddy. Like where we are now, like what magic is way more complicated than like what it seemed to be at the jump. But it's a really big theme for obviously Willow and Tara. And in the beginning, we read it directly as like a code, like, right. Maybe standards and practices won't let us kiss, but they will let us move a vending machine. Yeah.
With our intertwined fingers.
Yes.
Yes. Those intertwined fingers carry so much power.
Things Willow can do with her fingers, you guys. You have no idea. Lots of magic.
But like what was that conversation, if you remember it at the time, like when those moments were happening, you know, we have the vending machine or like floating the rose, or I have a whole chart of the stages of queer witch love, so I've got them fresh in my brain. But what was it like on set processing that?
In the beginning, there was no talk because we weren't aware that this was sort of the dynamic that they wanted, the way they wanted to go with the Willow Tara relationship. It was really just like, oh, they're friends doing magic, you know,
they're roommates.
She's gonna be part of a I was only 22. I missed the coding. I'm sorry. I was very sheltered. I didn't know. But then, you know, Joss took each of us aside separately and was like, hey, this is the direction we're gonna go. And he actually, from my understanding, he had friends, he and his wife at the time, Kai, had friends who were a lesbian couple. And I think this was sort of his mash note to them.
Mm.
You know?
Wow.
There wasn't that representation, and he wanted to put that out there for people that he cared about, to show them that they existed in the world, you know, in a way that really wasn't available at that time. So anyway, so we didn't know, then we knew. Well, it was interesting because the crew kept coming over. People would be like, oh my gosh, you guys have such chemistry. And I'd be like, yes, we do. Isn't it nice? We have so much fun doing our magic tricks together. And then we were taken aside. We both, you know, and then it, you know, so then when we would do stuff like floating the rose, yes, we all knew that this was sort of like a stand-in for, and it's interesting because this, you know, like looking back now that we're kind of opening this up, I think sometimes we want things to happen like this and people aren't ready for it. And maybe that process of doing magic and sort of getting people comfortable with the relationship via like a sort of like simpler sort of like coded way, so that when we actually did take the step and make it sort of official with the kiss and the body, people were like, oh, okay, this is just an evolution of this thing. So in retrospect, maybe the process, standards and practices did us kind of a favor, maybe by allowing it to build, you know, in a slower, sort of more simple fashion. I mean, yeah. I'm rewriting it in a way because that would be nice if that was like, you know, what actually happened. You know, it's shitty. It was like, we don't want that. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But looking back, maybe it was helpful unconsciously, because it allowed people to really get comfortable with that relationship and to really feel the feels, so that like when it finally like broke open, it was like, oh, this is the thing that I wanted that I didn't even know I wanted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because people were like, oh, this is hot. This is awesome. This is a mate. Like, this is what we were looking for and we didn't know it. Like, we were just enjoying their relationship.
Yeah. And I mean, it also, I agree with that analysis, because it also speaks to like the fact that intimacy can look a lot of different ways. And like, perhaps you can't move a vending machine with your partner, but like, it's not just about the kiss, you know, like there's so much else that's there that underpins a connection to another person.
Yeah. Well, how many times do you hear people who were friends for a really long time who didn't even know that they just like each other, and then they like fall in love with each other because they've gotten to know each other. And maybe that was what happened with Willow and Tara and our audience, is our audience got to fall in love with them slowly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there is something, you're right, there's something to that. I mean, think about like the Spike and Buffy relationship, the build on that. Will they, won't they? Like, we kind of, in a way, had that with Tara and Willow as well, because well, what's happening here? What's really going on?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
Anticipation.
Oh my God. What a great, sorry, but anticipation is definitely hits a question that we have later on. Jenny, I don't know if you know the one I mean, but.
Is there some floating involved with this?
Well, there could be. I was referring to it's in the musical section of our questions, but I was referring to you being in Rocky Horror with Tony Hedby, because you said anticipation, which is
that's
where my head.
That's where you went. I love it.
For anticipation.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. We just rocked out. I love it. Funny enough. So when Tia Carrera had to drop out, who did they think of that was just like Tia Carrera? Amber Benson. Not kidding.
Of course.
Not kidding. It was supposed to be Tia Carrera. Somehow she wasn't able to do it, and they called me. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like,
nice.
I'm reasonably confident about myself, but like, geez, if I look like Tia and like, I would never leave my house. Or just be like in the mirror all day. Ooh, yes. So that's how they were like, you want to go to Vegas and like sing some songs for Rocky Horror? And I, you know, had seen Rocky a zillion times, you know, starting from the time I was like 13.
Yeah.
Going and I'm not a virgin anymore. Getting pelted with toilet paper rolls, like very embarrassing and awesome.
Well, while we're here, should we talk about the musical?
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, as you mentioned, it's like one of the real standout episodes of the series. It's not like anything else. And it's also, I don't know, not to put too fine a point on anything and not to invite a zillion corrective emails from our listenership, but I think it's by far the best musical episode of any television series. And I have endured many.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
I kind of agree.
Mm-hmm.
You're great. Thank you. Feel like the lore is that like maybe like you and Tony and James were kind of like a big part of the sort of impetus, because you guys all have the pipes.
Aww.
So like, let's ride. Can you tell us like how the ball got rolling?
Yeah. So has anybody ever talked about this with you guys? The sort of like Shakespeare hangout things that were happening?
Maybe James talked a little bit
about
Shakespeare.
I feel like James did, right?
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Like I always say, the world is not black and white. It's not all bad and it's not all good. There's gradations. And for me, Buffy was that. Like, there were some like amazing things and I'm so proud. But there were things that were rough too. Things that were hurtful and not so fun.
Mm-hmm.
But going and spending, you know, a Saturday afternoon with the cast and with Joss and the writers and reading Shakespeare. And then that would devolve into like, you know, everyone having a drink and something to eat and kind of gathering around the piano and having little sing-alongs. It's like Little Women. It was like we were in Little Women. I guarantee no one has ever compared Buffy to Little Women. But yeah, so we would all sing and play piano, and you know, obviously Tony and James, like, they do music for a living also, as well as being actors. They're musical performers. I mean, Tony was in Rocky Horror back in, you know, and James and his band, you know, like his singing career and his band. And, you know, so yeah, we were all pro. We were like, yeah, you want to do a musical? We are so in. Everybody was really on board. I think, you know, for Allison, she's not a singer, so it was a little less like, but she like totally did it. Like, hats off. Like, when something that you're like, not my thing, and you do it, like, hats off, right? It's really cool. And I know there was talk of Sarah, someone voicing Sarah, and she was like, no, I'm going to do it myself. Even though it's something that I don't do, I'm going to do it. And I also take my hat off to her. Like, that's a scary, both of them, it's scary to do something that, like, you're like, oh, that's not my thing.
Yeah.
But you do it, and they both were great. You know?
And I know that, you know, Sarah also wound up doing so much of the dancing, even though
she's
like,
great with the I'm not the dance. I mean, you see, well, you can see me walk into the pillar, right?
Jeez. Yes. I truly,
a beloved moment.
You know what's incredible is we watched the episode, I don't even know how many times at this point, getting ready for our episode, and I still haven't seen it. I don't know
what?
How. I know.
How everyone said it's so glaring to me.
I'm like, miss it every time.
So
so do you remember that moment? Like, you remember it happening?
Oh yeah. No, it happened. And I did what, you know, that like that Pee Wee Herman moment where you're like, I meant to do that. I totally meant to do that. I had that moment. I was like, I meant to, and I looked around and I'm like, oh, nobody, no one saw. Oh, nobody saw. I don't even have to do the Pee Wee moment. I don't have to do the, like, I meant to do that, and nobody saw. Yes, score Amber. And then I watched the episode. I'm like, the editor saw. Put that in there. Bingling, walking into a pole.
Oh, it's so good, though. I mean, I haven't seen ridiculous. It, but I know it delights everybody. And one of these days, yes, I'm going to catch it for myself.
I feel like I stupidly called it out myself and, right, like, started the ball rolling. Like, I think maybe if I had just kept my mouth shut, nobody would have ever noticed. But of course, I would rather have people laugh and be like, be involved in the ridiculousness than to let it, like, my sense of, like, respect for myself is low in that way. If I can get you to laugh by debasing myself, I will.
Did you have, I mean, you do, apart from that infamous pole moment, which usually would mean something entirely different.
Totally different. Totally different. This is the least sex workery, strippery, like, pole moment ever.
But did you have, I mean, you must have had dance experience before this, because you have a whole dance solo earlier before we get to the levitation, which we definitely will get to.
So I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm a mutt Jew girl from Birmingham. And I did tons of theater growing up and did, like, ballet and tap and jazz, gymnastics, singing. I just did it. I was like that kid, that really, like, annoying, like, theater kid.
Me too. And,
which is, like, the best. What an amazing way to grow up, you know? Like, I loved it. I loved participating in theater. It was wonderful for me. It was such a great outlet, and it taught me so much and gave me, as a shy kid, the ability to put on my, like, Amber happy face and go out into the world and be, like, an introverted extrovert. But yeah, I did all the dancey stuff growing up. But I will say that I honestly am not the most coordinated. Like, I did all that stuff. I, you know, can do it, but I'm spatially, like, a little not with it. Like, I walk into stuff all the time, and I apologize to inanimate pieces of furniture all the time. Like, the coffee table and I have a real, like, hardcore relationship with me just constantly apologizing to it. Sorry. I'm really sorry. My boyfriend's like, wait, why are you apologizing to a coffee table? But I heard it. I feel badly.
I know there's something that's on everyone's minds. You know?
Oh, yes.
A lot of people who act, you know, inevitably one day will be called to engage in some semblance of a sex scene in their film, their television show, whatever.
Yes.
But it's so few of those people will get to levitate during said sex scene. I was just wondering if you can tell us anything about, like, the rigging, the, like, how is it, what's the practical end? Are you being raised on some kind of a, I'm gesturing with two flat hands.
Two flat hands going like, there's some like.
Yeah. I think you should tell Amber what we caught, what we named this moment.
I think coined the name for the technique, which is levitatilingus.
Yes.
Oh, hell yeah. Decent
about it.
Yeah.
Love that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you allowed to say the real word? Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. You can say any word you want,
Amber.
I love that I got to participate in the first, like, full-on cunnilingus moment on national network television.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, I'm saying that, and there may be others. Maybe you'll get some emails going, well, actually, in season 5 of Cop Rock, I know that there was a cunnilingus moment.
Did you just say Cop Rock?
I did, because I'm old.
LaToya is gonna lose her shit. Our host of Angel on Top has brought up Cop Rock like 50,000 times. That's just such a random thing. Anyway,
well, it was
LaToya,
so
that's
fascinating
for you.
As a kid, going like, "Wait, they're singing and they're cops? I don't understand. I like it, kind of. Maybe not. I can't tell."
Anyway, not to distract from the main event.
Levitatilingus, is that?
Nailed it.
Yeah.
Levitatilingus. So it was, let's see if I can get the whole thing correctly, sort of parsed out. So it was like a board and there was like a lever sort of.
Like a seesaw kind of?
Yeah, kind of. And all like the big Teamster guys were like holding it down and then slowly would lift it up, like let it go and it would lift up. So I was surrounded, like in the middle of my levitatilingus, I was surrounded by men watching.
I feel like the male gaze
was very involved in this process. No, it was literally like, it was that moment and the ice cream truck and Restless moment. Allison and I are all kitted up. And literally that, like, all the dudes were like, we can help you make the ice cream thing, like, we need to help with this. Men you've never seen before who like hang out at the trucks are like coming in to help. And we had the best crew. Like I'm sure people have talked about this before, but Buffy from the Teamsters all the way to the top, like it was such a good crew. Like they worked so hard. They were so kind. I didn't have my driver's license when I started on Buffy. And the Teamsters over the 3 years I was on the show were like, kid, just go get your, we'll give you a parking space. If you go get your, I'm scared to get my, if you go get your license, we'll put your name on a little thing, put it on the space. They were trying so hard to get me to like, go get my driver's license. They were like the nice, like truly like, when I see people that worked on Buffy, it's just old home. Like they're just such good humans, just good people. We were so, so blessed to have such a good crew who dedicated, you know, their lives to the show. Because let me tell you, you'd start on Monday coming in at like 5 a.m. and then we'd have these split weeks. By the time Friday came up, we were coming in at 6 p.m. and working all night. So these people like did not see their families. Like they had Sundays with their families and that's kind of it. Like, God. Like it was all inclusive.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Like, did you get your driver's license?
Finally. It took a long time. I know. And everyone's like, oh, are you from New York? I'm like, no, I'm just a dork.
That is very, it's very New York. License. Yeah.
It's very New York. I should just lie and go, oh yeah, totally New York. Oh my God. So the levitatilingus was these dudes with this sort of seesaw sort of contraption releasing me so that I would go up in the air for you make me come.
Right. Pleat.
Pleat.
We're gonna fantastic. Pretend like those dudes. We should have never asked the question.
Right? Erase the dudes. You don't want to know about the
erase
dudes.
The dudes
are gone.
Yeah.
The dudes aren't really there. They're right. They're imaginary dudes. Imaginary. You don't have to see them. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is look at what's on the screen. That's the most important thing. But it was funny that like it took like 7 burly big dudes to make me levitate. I mean, that dress it weighs so much, that dress. It's so hard to get her to levitate with that dress.
Today's episode is brought to you by Regal Cinemas. If you're anything like me, you deeply enjoy going to the movies. Going to the movies is probably among my top 3 all-time activities. I love seeing films on the big screen. I also love being around other people who are watching the same movie with me at the same time. And of course, I love eating giant buckets of popcorn. If you feel the same and you like going to the theater, Regal Unlimited is something that just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 movie visits. You can see any standard 2D movie anytime, no blackout dates, no restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in 4DX or IMAX or RPX or ScreenX, there's so many ways to watch movies these days, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you don't only save money on the tickets, you will also save on your snacks. And as previously mentioned, I love snacks. The only thing that can make me love a snack more is saving money on buying a snack. Members get 10% off of all non-alcoholic concession items with membership. Regal Unlimited, all you can watch movie subscription pass. It pays for itself in 2 visits. So if you're planning to see 2 movies this month, join Regal Unlimited and sign up now. You can sign up in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. Sign up for Regal Unlimited using code BUFFERING and earn 10% off your 3-month subscription. Please let us know about all of the movies you see and how the popcorn is.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
To the point of, like, thinking about you, like, not driving and Tara not driving, yeah. Are there, like, you know, where is the, on the Venn diagram of Amber and Tara, like, where is the overlap, if there is? Like, what parts of Tara are parts of you? And did, like, any of Tara kind of, like, leave with you as well?
Well, we're both, like, very law-abiding.
Nice.
I am made fun of for my inability to do things if a sign says not to do them.
Oh my God, Jenny too.
Yeah, like
hell yeah.
Like we were in Burlington, Vermont in the evening, and we were on this side street kind of wandering around looking so pretty, and there was a sidewalk with like a sign that said do not walk. There's no one around. It's like, you know, getting dark, and I wouldn't walk on the sidewalk.
Respect.
I was horribly made fun of for not, mm-hmm. like, there's nobody here. Why are you, like, this is for the daytime when people are doing something on this sidewalk.
Jenny would have been on the side of the street with you, yeah, also, yeah. Not walking.
That's me.
Absolutely. And I, solidarity. And
I think that's Tara also. Mm-hmm. She's very, like, law-abiding. If there's a sign that says don't do it, Tara will not do it, and neither will Amber. that shyness that Tara had is I am definitely an introverted extrovert where I am definitely, like, it's hard, like, I have to work myself up to be able to, like, go into a situation, and then I turn it on and I'm like, bah, 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 you know, but, like, inside, like, I'm constantly like, ah! I have to talk.
So, okay, so we talked a little bit about practical effects with the seesaw and the men.
Yes. So sorry. The dancing alone in my dress was all me.
Yeah.
There were no men involved.
Were there any other like effect moments like that that you remember? I mean, there's so much magic in general, but also there's like the end of season 5 with Glory and like all that stuff. So what sticks out to you?
So to get my brain sucked out, the things, that just happen in life. Mm-hmm. So they did like a cast of my head, and you have to, it's like alginate, and they basically cover your whole head with alginate to make this live cast of your head.
Oh my God.
And then I can't remember if it was blue or green. I think it was blue, but so they had this fake head, and that's, they could put in the effects, and they could put, maybe it was green for the, so they could put in, you know, so there was this like fake head of me, no hair or anything. It was just like this green or blue head of me shaped my face and head. And I guess whoever drove it over to location put it in the passenger seat so they could ride carpool.
Like, so where the hell is that now?
You right? Know? Who knows? It's probably doing some interesting things. I don't want to know what it's like action figures. They're things you don't want to know. Yeah. I know what I did to Barbie.
did you keep anything from the set? I guess you said you were rule abiding, so maybe not, but
not really. Like, I know, I think Allison said she took the newel post from the staircase, like that sort of rounded sort of, I think that's a newel post, whatever that is. That sort of thing on top of the she took that, I think, is what I remember her saying. No, they let me keep like the pants that I wore when I died.
Your death pants. How thoughtful.
Death pants. So you have your death pants. Oh God, that's sad.
Yeah. I think we actually auctioned them off, and they like for charity or something at one point. I can't remember what I did with them. I think that was kind of it. Like I have like this really great little box that had the Buffy logo on it that Todd McIntosh, who did who was the head of the makeup department, that he had made for people, sort of like a wrap gift at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. And I have that still, which is really great. Todd's such a sweetheart.
Since you brought up your death pants, we don't want to talk about Tara dying really at all, but it exists. And so perhaps we can go there for a moment and just like, I wonder, because, you know, it's been 20 say years. What it was like at the time to move through that. Like, what, like, if you knew there was going to be the outcry that there was as it was
happening.
It
wouldn't have happened. If anyone, I truly believe if Joss had understood, he truly, because this is just who he is. He was thinking about story. Mm-hmm. He was just thinking about, how do I get Willow to the point where she can become Dark Willow? That is like, he was just goal oriented. It was like, Dark Willow, how do I get there? Oh, losing the most important thing in her life, which is Tara. Right. That was it. Like, there was no, like, I mean, the fact that we have the kill your gaze trope and we are partly responsible for that is, I think, so upsetting to me and to everybody else. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to be a part of that. If there had been any understanding that was what was going to happen, I don't think they would have done it. Yeah. Truly. I know people get really angry and they're really mad at the people that created the show because of it. And it wasn't intentional. But sometimes the things that hurt the most are the thoughtless things, right?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, I don't know. I mean, this person that I spoke with that I was talking about before, like, they shared some posts from like the Willow boards. And even those posts were like, it was like there was a lot of hurt. But even those posts were really clear on saying, like, we don't think that anyone that created this show is like homophobic or anything like that. No, but these are the reasons in which like this thing is harmful to us. Because especially then, I mean, it's not that it's good to, you know, kill your gays now, but at least we've got a few more gays to go watch, whereas then it was not so much. And
I was just gonna say, it's, you know, like, right now we talk about racial bias, people are like, well, I'm not racist, and, you know, as a white woman, I have been given things because of that. And I think we have to look at the kill your gays trope in the same way. If you are not thinking, because it is biased. There is a bias built in to our society. And so as a cis white dude writing this moment, it doesn't occur to you because of your bias that this will impact people in a particular way. And it's the same thing with racism in this country and the fact that we are a racist country. It is embedded in our bedrock, you know, that is just how it is. And like saying that we, like, I am a cis white woman who's been given every chance. And I am, you know, I have to look at that entitlement and own it and go, you know what? I can do better. I need to be more thoughtful and open the door for other people and let other people speak and be a, and participate. And like, I need to just be quiet. And I think in this moment with Tara, like, there was bias because, you know, they're not, he's not queer. He's not a queer person writing this moment. He is a white dude writing this moment. And it didn't occur to him out of that bias, you know, and we just have to talk about these things because when we talk about them, maybe we can change them, you know?
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I mean, I think that that conversation that, not that it started in that exact moment, but like, I think that people who are creating shows and movies now are more aware of not only that trope, but like the importance of like, if you're going to tell this person's story, have somebody who has that story in the room, like things like that.
Yes.
And those of us, you know, I think we're all of a similar age. Like that was not the conversation then for those of us who had more privilege.
I mean, that, I mean, I think about like my friend Javi wrote the episode of the 100, you know, and he knew. And, you know, he told them.
Yes.
He was like, I know Amber. I know Amber. Uh-huh. And because that wasn't his show, he had to write this thing that he knew was. And so he put himself out there afterwards and was on social media going, I know this is awful and I'm really sorry. And come to me, talk to me. I will talk to you and go through this trauma with you.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But we're still in a place where, like, people aren't aware. We're still not aware. We're still fighting. And I'm guilty. We're all guilty of it. Like,
of course.
No one is perfect. I fuck up all the time. I do the wrong thing, you know? But instead of getting defensive about it, which I've, that's happened to me in the past, where I've like, no, but I'm not. I'm like, well, fuck you, Benson. You are. You're like, you grew up. You were lucky. Yes. You know, I did get bullied because, you know, I was Jewish and went to temple and people are very anti-Semitic sometimes. I have experienced it, but I pass as just a like totally white lady. Mm-hmm. I don't have to deal with that every day.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and I imagine that, and I'll say this. So I imagine that like the experience of moving through that.
I get on my like soapbox.
No, that, we're literally here for you to be on any soapbox or otherwise elevated platform that you would like to be on. So. but I imagine that the experience of like playing Tara and also of like moving through all that was after seeing Red has impacted your own awareness of these things and probably the way that you engage in the world. And
totally.
I will add like a tiny personal anecdote onto this, which is that, and I didn't like even connect this until a couple of days ago when I was like sitting down and thinking about talking with you. The work that I do outside of buffering is for LGBTQ plus communities and what have you. And a million years ago, before I had ever even seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer, it was like 20, I watched the show very late. And so it was like 2012. And I did a big fundraiser for what is now called mykidisgay.com, but what was then the Parents Project. And it got huge, like it was spread all over the place. And you helped create that. You donated to that thing before I knew like any of this would then come to pass. And so I just put it in there as like a little personal thing that I imagine, and not that you wouldn't have supported this anyhow, but how I guess I'm asking, did the embodying the role of Tara and the experience sort of shape your own presence in the world?
You know, because I was a theater kid, I grew up around people who were gay. Mm-hmm. You know, I was 8 or 9. I did this like Birmingham Children's Theater play of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And I was out of school for like 6 weeks. And it was a couple of kids, but it was all mostly adults. And I just remember like how wonderful the men were who participated in the play with me, so kind and caring. And I didn't know that they were gay men. You know, I didn't know they were LGBTQ plus. Like, I didn't know what that was. I was 8 or 9 years old, but they being in my life impacted me because I was like, they're just these really kind people to me that treated me well when I was a kid. But it became clear to me as I grew up, I was like, oh, they're gay men who date other men. And it didn't make a difference to, I didn't care because I had a great experience. And I was shown that like, everybody is a person. We all poop. You know, it doesn't matter who you love. We all like have to eat. We all poop. We all basically have to sleep. You know, we're just people underneath it all, whether regardless of our sexual orientation or the color of our skin or our religious affiliate, like we're all human beings. And I think because of my experience with parents who were very liberal and, you know, being part of the theater community as a kid, like it made me very, very aware of that stuff from an early age and very like mad when someone would be mean to somebody because they were different from them. It really upset me. And I've always felt like that. And I'm sure I've done things that hurt people and that are unconscious, but I try to be aware, you know? And then playing Tara, of course, was like an extension of that. For me, it's like, no, like they should be able to kiss. They should be able to have a, like, to me, it just was like a no-brainer. Like, why would anyone care? Like, it doesn't, like, who gives a shit? Like, they love each other. That's the important thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, like, I just always felt like when somebody was in a position where they were treated badly, I just always want to like fight for them.
Yeah.
You know, and then of course I've been very conflicted because I am a straight white woman playing a queer character. And 20 something years ago, it's like, no one talked about the fact that, oh no, you're not LGBTQ plus playing this character. Mm-hmm. And so there was a lot of conflict for me about like walking in her shoes and playing her when probably somebody who was queer should have played her. That's what should happen, right? That's the right thing. And so I've, you know, like I felt like the only way I could sort of make myself feel okay with it in retrospect was to be like, no, do the good work, fight the good fight, be a part of that, like do what you can to help and further, like, you know, people being treated fairly across the board.
Oh yeah. Well, and that, I mean, it's like, it's clear from hearing you talk that like now that wouldn't happen. That wasn't part of the, I think most of us, it was not part of the conversation.
It was bias. Like we, you know, it is like we're biased because we don't talk about these things. We didn't talk about these things. Now we do, but we didn't, you know?
Right. And that's what it's about. It's like about listening. Yeah. Anyway, Jenny, I feel like I have led the charge, and I know we want to talk about the future,
yes,
the future that Tara didn't get, and like what you're doing now and things like that. And I want to be respectful of your time. So yeah, go ahead.
Wicked quick, before we get to the future, that like the theoretical hypothetical future, right? on top of the unbearable injury of experiencing the loss of Tara in the show, we must also swallow the insult of the reality that she dies violently and accidentally at the hands of a universally reviled villain, maybe the most irredeemable character to ever set foot inside the show. How do you feel about the specifics of how it was made that Tara died?
The fact that it was this sort of like outside of the norm death, like everything else is sort of magic-y, you can come back for it. But this was like a gun. This was real. This was an accident. You know, this was like a human doing it. Like, it was just like, I think it was all of those beats that made it so like awful. It was really like, it was really intense. It was not a, you know, like that was not a good, it was not a good way to die, your shirt, you know, like, come on, like that. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah,
and I think
yeah.
it just was so painful because of all those pieces. But done that way on purpose because they wanted it to be like, they wanted the audience to understand why you had to go on the journey with her. Mm-hmm. Like Dark Willow did some bad shit, right? Mm-hmm. So in order to maintain like the empathy for that character, you had to have experienced the loss she experienced.
Right.
You know, because otherwise she like becomes irredeemable, and she had to be redeemable because it's Willow. He had to be able to make her okay. So you had to give her this awful thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it was done specifically that way on purpose to make it just as awful as possible. But on a happier note, like I got a cake that said, ooh, it was a tombstone that said, rest in peace, Tara McClay, with the dates. And there's a lovely Polaroid floating around of me, like holding a big knife, with tears and mascara everywhere and everyone there while I'm getting my tombstone cake.
Well, can we just like pretend for a moment, or longer than a moment, that Tara didn't die?
I'm pro.
We had a couple of listeners. I mean, a lot of listeners wrote in and just wondered like, what would Tara's future be like if she hadn't died? And Jamie,
what was the best one?
Jamie had one that I really enjoyed because I feel like it's really accurate, which is, personally, I'd like to think that Tara and Willow would have a big, beautiful apartment somewhere filled with too many cats and too many plants. do you like ruminate, like could you imagine what Tara would be doing right now?
I feel like Tara would be like a counselor. Helping LGBTQ plus youth who are, you know, out in the world, and she's there to sort of support and love and be there and to mentor. And I think, you know, I like to, you know what I've decided that they did actually, like, she's doing that for money, but really what they've done is they've opened like a B&B somewhere.
Yes.
Some small town in Northern California. And it's very much like, you know, Newhart, where they have like their little inn and their little B&B, and like they, you know, just live this lovely little sort of new agey, adorable cat and plant filled life, with Dawn coming to spend the summers with them. And
correct.
I do feel like they kind of, I say this and I do mean this. I feel like Willow and Tara had the best relationship. Like, we really did. Before it all went to shit, we had the best relationship, and we were kind of like in charge of raising Dawn.
1,000%.
You know? So to me, like, that, I love that. And I think that's what would go on.
We will be making reservations at that B&B.
Correct. Wouldn't that be sweet? Like, it would be gluten-free, vegan.
Yes.
You know? Like bicycles for everybody to ride.
Lots of Miss Kitty Fantasticos.
Yes, Miss Kitty Fantastico and all of her progeny.
Do you know? Actual Miss Kitty, but
Miss Kitty was many kitties.
Oh,
there was so much pussy on that show, let me tell you. Sorry.
Oh my God.
No, that's a great soundbite. So thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, there were so many meows on that show. I'm not even kidding you. Every time we had a Miss Kitty Fantastico moment, especially with the kitten version, there were like 50 little kitties running around.
Because
they can only work for certain amounts of time. So you get one for like 5 minutes,
kitten,
and then the next one. What was really funny is, you know, in the scene where they wanted the kitties to lick. So they put like tuna oil on Allie's chin to get the kitty to come off the kitten to like lick. Tara does love tuna. So do the kitties.
Oh my God. Wow. The things you
Tara
do.
Tara loves tuna.
Yeah.
That cracks me up every time. Like that, like we couldn't get through that scene. That was weird.
Oh God. Yeah. I mean, nothing sexier than like a woman smelling like tuna oil. Like tuna, really.
Fish. Yeah. Yeah. For kitties, yes. For the meows, yes. So many meows. Sorry. I had to go to the dirty place. I apologize.
No, nice. That's what this podcast
Life's
is
too
for.
Short.
Jenny has a whole segment called 1080 PhD. So we're...
There's what? Just a lot to examine.
Yeah.
There's a lot to look at.
Yeah.
That's all.
Yeah. In like 4K, like in your face.
Yeah. Yes. We haven't graduated to 4K yet, actually.
It's a process.
We're getting there. 4K is coming.
While Kristen and I are like very busy analyzing every moment of a television show you were on some years ago, that's what we fill our days with.
Yep.
What are you up to like right now? What are you working on? What's in the oven?
What's in the oven? Nothing, because I'm sick of cooking. I mean, too much damn cooking this pandemic. I made bagels, for God's sake.
Did you really?
Whoa. I did, twice. And? Once was good, once was not so good.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I'm not the greatest baker, but I did that. I did it. I did it. I did my pandemic baking, did it for the team.
It had to be done.
It had to be done. What am I doing now? I am I'm working on two podcasts. One I cannot talk about. These are like Fair. Narrative fiction ones.
Oh, cool.
One I cannot talk about, but I think you guys would enjoy it if it happens a lot. And then the other one is I'm doing a podcast based on my Witches of Echo Park books. So yeah, so that's kind of cool. And then I've been writing like Lifetime movies and Hallmark Channel movies, like mysteries, which is really fun, and like true crime stuff. So, working on some of that stuff. And I've been spending a lot of time rereading like old mysteries, golden age detective-y things, and watching as much crappy TV as possible.
I was going to say, what are you like, you know, the job of a person who's like writing and creating is also to ingest. So I wonder what you're like watching, and we have a very active book club. If you're reading anything that you'd recommend.
I'm not reading anything new. I'm reading I'm going back and rereading all of the Agatha Christie's, which are kind of problematic in places. I didn't remember how intensely problematic. Although they do call all the old ladies in the books old pussies. Just like
what?
Like literally, what? The detectives will be like, "Oh, that Miss Marple, she's an old pussy." It's like, wait, what? What?
You know, oh my god! God. Wow.
Just like what? Not kidding. Every time I have to stop because I'm like,
well, because you brought up the Witches of Echo Park, and I know that some people know about this, about what you've written, but maybe not everyone does. So, and it's maybe bears mentioning that, like, on Buffy, you were playing a witch, and yes, now you're writing about witches. So,
witches.
Discuss
witchy witches. Yeah, no, I love the occult. I love witchcraft. It was something I was interested in way before I was on the show. So I was able to sort of to parlay some of what I already knew into like what we were doing with Buffy, although Buffy really had its own mythology and its own sort of thing going on. But it was really neat. And I met tons of people who were involved in the Wiccan community because of Buffy, and that was really neat. And to hear like what worked or didn't work for them was kind of interesting, and very, very, you know, like engaging. And then I ended up writing a 3-book series about some witches in Echo Park that were kind of based on things that I had experienced. I won't go too in depth into that, but like there were things that had happened that I had experienced, and I thought would make interesting fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's kind of cool.
We're gonna put that trilogy on our book
in the book club.
Aww. Yeah, it would be a fantastic just
it's
checking
fun.
Off every box in the book club. Yeah
that's really fun. I really had a lot of fun writing them, and you know, like I'm always growing as a creative person, and you know, to talk about like this podcast, which is Echo Park, you know, it's like it's not like an interview thing. It's more like talking about the process of writing and creating. Oh. And you know, talking about where the books came from and why I wrote them, you know.
So if we want to learn more about these experiences that you had, that's where Jenny's going to immediately run. I can see it in her face.
Echo Park is really an interesting place, and it's full of sort of this esoterica. It was a really cool place to, I lived there for many years, and I have like a whole crew of lady friends that are from my Echo Park days. But like in like the 50s, it was called Red Hill because like all of the like artists and kind of communists and kind of political activists lived in Echo Park. And, you know, it's a really magical place.
Cool.
I love.
Very cool. Well, I always like to at least say, is there anything that we didn't ask you that you want to talk about? Is there like a story you were just like, oh, too bad they didn't ask?
I must tell. I mean, it's funny. Like, I look back on Buffy and it's like, it was like, no one was like a big prankster. There weren't like big pranks. Like some set, like I know like Supernatural, those guys were pulling pranks on each other all the time. You know, like we didn't really have that kind of, but it was like being part of a family, you know? And I think that's why the character dying was hard, because I'd spent 3 years with all of these people. And then to like have that sort of taken away was tough. So,
when I know that, you know, I know that you've been so engaged over the years with the fandom, with the Buffy fandom, and
they're like the best. Like, we really do have the best fans. They are so engaged and so smart and so thoughtful. And like you said, they communities have found each other and had families around that. Like, it's just, it's like this community that will never die. It just gets bigger and more impactful and wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah. We're very like honored to be a part of that, to be a part of the community. But truly, it's really special. And
join us.
Yeah. We'll never escape. Part of the cult of Buffy Summers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, there is no way to really thank you enough for sharing time with us and your stories.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I am so glad that this worked out. And then I got to spend this afternoon with you guys, this lovely LA afternoon, East Coast evening.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it nice? Is it 75 and sunny in LA? Is it just doing its LA thing?
It's in the 80s, but it's, yeah, okay.
Hot, yeah.
We're so lucky in LA. Like, a lot of the state right now is burning up.
And... Right. Yeah, my sister actually is up in Portland, so went through that, like, 100 and nuts.
So climate change is real, people.
Oh my god. Been raining, like, but I don't even know. I feel like the whole house is gonna float away.
Get vaccinated. Climate change is real. I just wanna reiterate. I am vaccinated. I got my 2 Pfizer jabs. Like, do it. Nice. It's important.
Yeah.
Buffy people are thoughtful, logical, intelligent humans who understand that, like, yes, there are some scary bits associated with COVID and getting vaccinated, but the way that it saves people who can't get the vaccine, like, makes it necessary. You have to do it, not just for you, but for everybody else. Like, be empathetic and be kind, and like, it's for you and for the people around you. That's really important. You do it because we want to, like, save the people around us.
Mm-hmm.
People who can't get vaccinated, and the kids and the older people.
Yeah,
the oldies, as I like to call them. My parents.
The old pussies. We got
the old pussies. You do it for the old pussies. The old pussies can't do it for themselves. You got to do it for them. Everyone needs a helping hand, you guys.
Well, we will.
Well, I think we did what we came here to do.
We did. We'll be checking in to the Tara and Willow Inn for our next vacation. But yeah, Amber, thank you so much.
Oh,
and
thank you guys. From, such a pleasure.
Like, from all of our humans. I'm gonna end this reading one of their messages to you. Okay.
Aww.
Rika is one of the messages, and Rika writes, please make sure to completely shower Amber with the love of us shy and nerdy queers, to whom Tara and Amber's wonderful embodiment of her mean the absolute world. This performance is such a rare televisual gem even today.
Oh, I wish I could give Rika a big hug. Virtual hugs to everyone.
We feel it. But thank you, Amber.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.